Sherry, it's David.
Yes.
Can we confirm, how are we going to confirm the quorum?
I have just confirmed that we have 14 at this point.
And what do we need for a quorum?
14.
Oh, then that works out perfectly. Well, then in that case, good morning, everyone. And if everyone is prepared, I will call this meeting to order. And this meeting's agenda has been posted by consideration by the board and executive committee. The meeting is being videoed and audio recorded, so please speak clearly into the microphone when you make a motion or comment. Please be sure to state your name when making a motion so it can be captured for the minutes. And also, by now, I, David Bristol, do certify that a quorum of the North Central Texas Workforce Board is present. The meeting is called to order, and at the time is 9:30. At this time, we'll unmute the public telephone line, and if any members of the public wish to make a comment on today's agenda, please announce your name, city of residence, and the agenda item on which you are speaking. We'll give a maximum of 3 minutes permitted per speaker. At the conclusion of this opportunity, this public telephone line will be muted for the duration of the meeting. And Cherie, are you handling that part for me?
I am, and that once I do mute, give me about 10 seconds to then unmute the board members before you continue.
Okay, so we're looking for members of the public at this time.
About 20.
Cherie, do you have any members of the public that have indicated that they wanted to speak?
I do not, so I will mute all. Give me just a moment to unmute the board members.
Thank you. Okay. Are you complete, Cherie?
Give me just one moment. So I'm almost done.
Thank you.
You should be able to continue on.
All right. Thank you very much. Agenda item number two is to declare any conflicts of interest. Board members must acknowledge all possible conflicts included in this agenda and declare each. Board members must abstain from discussion and voting on each action item identified. And this process will allow the secretary to record your intentions in advance. Please abstain from any items that constitute real or apparent conflicts of interest. Do we have anyone that wish to declare a conflict of interest? Okay. Hearing none, item number three is the consent items. There are three items listed under our consent agenda for today. Does any board member wish to remove any of the items from the consent agenda for discussion? And to the board members, you may have to individually unmute yourself to speak at this point. Okay, hearing no member that wants to remove any of the items, I'll ask for approval to approve the consent items.
Mr. Chairman, this is Carlton Tidwell. I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
All right, I have a motion from Carlton Tidwell, and I'm looking for a second.
Second. A second, Aaron Tebow.
Thank you, Aaron. So we've got a motion and a second, and we'll ask for everyone to say aye, and then I'll ask for all those who are opposed. So all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
And anybody in opposition? Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to item number four, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action on the committee updates. And prior to getting to these items, I wanted to just take a couple minutes to thank all of the board members in particular for their flexibility during this period of time. It's obviously a very difficult to conduct meetings like this, and I know we've all been quite busy with our individual businesses and workplaces. But I also wanted to take a moment to compliment the entire board and the staff during this very trying time. I know doing some of the executive committee meetings that David Setzer and his team have been overwhelmed, I would say, not in a positive way, but there's a huge amount of work that they have been doing. And I just wanted to compliment David and the entire team there for trying to get the to keep up with all of the things that are going on. So
you're not a robot. You have to look at the road. There's a bridge.
For all of our members, I would caution you as we're talking here, if your microphone is open, we can hear everything going on in the background. So please use caution when you're unmuting yourself. At this time, I'll go to Kenny Weldon for the Strategic Leadership Committee, a strategic plan update.
Okay, good morning. Can you hear me, David?
I'll just do that.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's good to be here with everybody. The Strategic Planning Committee met on April 21st, and we've already voted on one of the key items that we addressed, which was the target occupation list policy and getting that updated. The second thing and the item that you see on the agenda there was to discuss an update to the strategic plan. And as we last met, we were planning on having a board session to update the strategic plan, and we had gone through a lot of effort to identify key priorities that we wanted to work on. Recent discussions with both David and Christina, and I'll allow Christina to expand on that here in a minute, is a recommendation from the committee for us to postpone that, obviously, from today and into later this year as we get hopefully out of crisis mode and into more of a sustainable posture where we can begin to address some of these more long-term issues. I think one of the key things in our discussion for the board as a takeaway for our recommendation to delay this is for us to not let this set too long so that we lose touch with some of these key issues that have been dealt with by the staff, especially, and try to fold those into the strategic planning effort moving forward. So the weekly updates or the updates that David has been and staff have been putting together are going to be a very, very valuable resource for us to look at moving forward with that. And so, Christina, let me turn it over to you and let you speak specifically to our consultant support and the timing with the July and September meetings that we've discussed.
Good morning. We were in conversations with TIP Strategies, as Kenny mentioned, and had intended for them to join us at this meeting to provide an introduction to them as a consultant for us and also an overview of the project. But as we got closer to this and in meeting with them and consulting with strategic leadership and executive committee, we thought it would be better to delay it, as Kenny mentioned. I'm sorry, I'm repeating everything he said. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at, we did talk to them about how have they done this type of project with other agencies in the past. And they said that sometimes they do like a one-day retreat, or you could break that into two half-day sessions, which is what we were trying to break up over three different board meetings. To be honest with you, I think spreading it over three different board meetings is probably the least likely of what they normally do because it's such a long period of time. But what we were trying to do is simultaneously work on wrapping up the current strategic plan while building these new focus areas and identifying what goals the board was interested in seeing us accomplish in the next round. So to allow us a little bit more mind space to focus on that, we are going to wait and have two half-day sessions in late summer, early fall. TIP Strategies will join us for the July board meeting just to provide, again, an introduction and an overview of what their process is going to be so that you know a little bit more what will be expected of you when we do finally have those meetings later in the summer.
Okay, thank you. So any questions from the board for that? And if not, David, that concludes our committee report.
Thank you, Kenny, and thank you, Christina. Carlton, if you would, I'm sorry. Well, let me make sure there were no questions from the board members there for you, Kenny. Any questions on the strategic plan update? Okay. With that, we'll go to Carlton for the Oversight and Accountability Committee.
The Oversight and Accountability Committee has been meeting, but the focus of our meetings most of the time was our COVID-19 issues, and obviously with childcare, a lot of them being closed except for essential workers. So when you hear the reports today from our financial report that Randy's going to give now, and when Michael gives our performance update, just kind of keep in mind some of the things that we've been going through during the past month or so. So, Randy, go right ahead.
All right. Thanks, Carlton. A good morning, members of the board. And like Carlton said, this what I'll try to do, I'll go through the typical presentation you're used to seeing. We're going to review the workforce board and your staff functions first, and then we'll look at ResCare, your major subrecipient, look at their expenditures. I'll try to point out some of the areas that are a little bit unique now due to the COVID-19 pandemic situation. So it is obviously affecting the expenditure some. So we'll go ahead and start with the workforce board and your staff functions. And I'll just quickly remind you again, this is October 1 through September 30th fiscal year. We're 6 months. This particular presentation is representative through March, which is 50% of your fiscal year. And you did have an overall approved budget. Y'all approved a budget of $14,201,450. And the as far as the expenditures through March compared to targets, the board was behind about 5.5% or $787,000. And we'll quickly go through a few of these line items that make up some of this lower than anticipated expenditures. So, Sheree, if we could do the next slide. All right, so personnel cost, as you can see, that's a large portion of the budget. The salaries, fringe, and indirect was over $7 million, the budget. And through the month of March, we were behind targets about 5% or $386,000. And so we'll look at our attrition chart that we normally look at on the next slide. So you can see we do have some attrition there. I will tell you the ones that are unfilled, the early childhood specialist, and the senior quality assurance specialist, both of those positions have been hired since this March presentation date. So we're still looking to fill the senior or early childhood specialist, but the others have been filled. So, but you can tell there through the month of March, about 28.6 months of attrition. And again, all but one of those have been filled since that March date. Sheree, can we go to the next slide? So, we also pay for some other staff. I tell you in the previous meetings, you're used to hearing this. We do pay for about two fiscal monitors at the COG to help us monitor primarily our subrecipient. And they've had some attrition as well. So we're behind target for those two positions, about 17%. And as they're trying to get their staff fully hired. And then we do support about 8.5 technology staff at the COG level that supports the entire COG. But we do support about 8.5 of their positions to support not only the workforce staff, but also our 11 workforce centers. And they're pretty much on target, within about 1% of target. And then you see my note down there, I think I actually mentioned it last time, but the workforce board department at the COG has went down to the first floor on our Center Point 3 building, where y'all used to going into for the board meeting, or I'm sorry, when y'all used to, anytime you met for committee meetings over there. That first floor, we've built out some space there for Kelly Fontenot's child care staff. There's going to be about 13 staff down there. It's opening in June 1st, so it's going to be a really good area down there. We're going to use some of that attrition that she's had in her staff to help supply furniture and supplies and cabling and all that kind of stuff down there. So we are redirecting some of that attrition down there to early childhood specialist attrition down there to her new suite in CP3. So Sri Guno, equipment, software. I've mentioned this before. We have all kinds of equipment and things in there. You see software licenses and lease payment, computer lease payments, vehicles. We've actually purchased a vehicle, so they're in there. We purchased four vehicles for Kelly's four new childcare staff. They're out in the centers. When we go back to what we call normal, they're out and about most of the time, and it's cheaper just to buy vehicles than to pay travel. So those vehicles have been purchased, but a lot of the software licenses and servers, switches, that sort of thing, those typically we're looking at those during in the summer. So you'll see this number starting to get closer to target. You can see we were behind about 21%, $175,000, but I anticipate that getting closer to target by the end of the year. Okay, travel. I haven't mentioned this one. This one's pretty unique to the COVID-19 situation. So you see between overnight and non-overnight travel, we had about $348,000 budgeted. We hadn't spent a lot of that. You can tell we're behind about 33%, over $100,000. So I can't remember if I mentioned last time or not, but the COG has, until further notice, shut down travel for its staff. And so a lot of the travel that was scheduled for the springtime and summer doesn't look like that's going to occur. One of the prime trips that some of you, the board members, actually go to was the NOB meeting in Washington, D.C. That was scheduled for March. That's an annual meeting. And so that one was just about the time all this was hitting. And so that got canceled. And so we're going to see this we're going to have a lot of attrition in travel, I'll just tell you. So we're going to look for other ways to redirect this funding, or perhaps some of this could be a carryover for our 2021 year. But this is one that's really unique, the travel line item unique to the COVID-19 pandemic situation we're currently in. All right, Sheree, go ahead. This is the last one. You can tell we're actually a little bit ahead of target on this. This is leasehold improvements. We opened our new McKinney Workforce Center, which is an awesome center. If you haven't had a chance, I might make a point sometime to go by and take a look at it. It's really one of our, I think, our best working centers and best space plan centers to date. So it opened. We were in there January 2nd, and as you can imagine, all the costs of getting in there with furniture, supplies, cabling, just all the things that go with that. So we're right around target on that. We're still having final invoices trickle in, so I'm anticipating this to be right about target as we finish the year. All right, so let's go ahead and look at our subrecipient right quick, which is ResCare Workforce Services. Sheree, if we could advance the slide. So, again, I've mentioned almost every time, we have two primary contracts, one for the child care contract and one we call Workforce Services. They do have both contracts. Totaled together is about $64.2 million, and their contract year is the same as our fiscal year, October 1 through September 30th. And so their expenditures through March, which is 50% of their contract year, is about 3.4% or $2.2 million behind established targets for that time period. Obviously, the vast majority of their funding is in the child care contract. So through March, they were about 2% or $1.1 million behind target. You can see there the average kid served, the target established by the state for this year was 7,633 average kids served per day. And we were serving about 97% and right at 98% of that. So we were meeting target through the month of March. And then you'll see my last note down here. This is where it gets pretty involved, very unique to COVID-19. So we received early April timeframe another $21.6 million of child care specific to do certain things. And you can see some of them. Serve additional children of essential workers, pay for parent share of cost. The 25%, TDFC established a 25% supplement during this time frame for child care centers that remain open. So and Kelly can attest to this. This changes, if not daily, every other day or weekly. This has been a moving target, to say the least, trying to keep up with. And I don't blame TWC. This is just they're trying to address this situation. So a lot's going on. I know our daycares, our child care centers are, a lot of them have closed temporarily. Hopefully we're seeing those reopen in the near future. But so we're trying to not only serve the essential worker children, but also just give supplement 25% to the ones remaining open and trying to keep them incentivized to remain open. And then you see the parent share of costs. Typically the parents have to pay a percentage of their children's daycare cost. But through this time frame, TWC waived that as well. So we picked up the tab on that for the parent share of cost until further notice. So Randy. Again, this is changing daily, but as of right now, this is the way that's looking. And I'll stop right there. Child care has been a big had some big fluctuation. There's time frame. Any questions anybody have on the child care portion?
Yeah, Randy, this is Elaine.
Hey, Elaine.
Hi. I'm just curious on the definition of essential workers. Did you all use what the state mandated, or did you have your own? Did you add something to that? Or?
Yes, Kelly can correct me here, but it was the state of Texas, what the governor put out for their essential worker is what we utilized.
No, let me correct you, Randy. It was not.
Okay. That's why I asked.
Yeah, TWC came up with a list of priority occupations that they would provide childcare for, and that's the actual list that we did use.
Okay. I'm just curious, do you have a list that can we see that?
Yeah, we can certainly send it to you. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd just be curious. No, I'm glad to know that it wasn't just what the state.
No, the state's list was huge.
Yes. Yeah.
So they had to narrow it down. They did a subset.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah. If you could send that out, I'd be most appreciative.
Sure.
Thank you, Kelly. Thanks, Randy.
You bet. Thanks for correcting me on that, Kelly. So any other questions on childcare? Like I said, we'll keep you updated. This I know David includes this in some of his daily updates for the COVID situation. So we're having a call this afternoon. I'm noticing some on the agenda. This is probably going to change a little bit. So we'll keep you updated as things change.
Randy, so I have a question on it. So the governor is opening childcare facilities effective immediately.
Right.
Does the supplement go then? So he will have opened everybody. Is that supplement going to continue? And how much have we actually spent of that 21.6?
Okay, so again, Kelly, correct me here if I'm wrong on this, but I'll answer it in pieces. So we can get you the exact numbers, but we can tell you the essential workers, our target was approximately 3,000 kids to serve for 90 days. When I say serve, they established a 90-day serve period. And to date, I think we're close to half of that, over 1,000. That we have enrolled, that's the ones that Kelly said from TWC's essential worker list, those that met that definition, we're over 1,000 kids on that. Now, it appears what they're going to do, we're on a call this afternoon, as of tomorrow, May 20th, that will cease, meaning if you're already registered as essential with us, we're going to continue to serve you for that 90-day period. But we won't offer that any longer after tomorrow for new one enrolling additional from over and above what we already have. Kelly, did I say that right?
You did. That is okay. Going to the commissioners for approval today. So we should know more by our 1 o'clock phone call.
So this is Elaine. I've got another question in terms of that. So Kelly, in terms of the Texas Rising Star folks or the people who are a part of TWC, have they been notified that tomorrow this money will cease? So because they've been closed, and have you gotten any feedback about who's opening or who won't reopen? There are a few questions in there.
Anna's shaking her head. No, child care programs have not been notified of this. It was requested that we be allowed to notify them last week on Friday, and we did not receive approval to do that. So they will be notified. Like I said, we have a 1 o'clock phone call, so okay. More at one. Regarding TRS, there really has not been any discussion on Texas Rising Star, when we can get back into the centers to provide our mentoring services. That may be part of the call this afternoon.
Okay. It just concerns me that since the governor just said yesterday that places can reopen if they're thinking of reopening but could use the extra money, that we don't have the ability to reach out to them and say, hey, folks, if you get in touch with us today, you can get some extra money, but tomorrow you're SOL.
I understand.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Kelly, this is Rolanda. I had a question. If it does cease as of tomorrow, does this affect people that are currently waiting to be processed for the essential worker childcare?
No, anyone that has actually submitted an application by 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon will be served for their 3-month period of time.
Perfect. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So I think, Andy, the second half of that question was how much you said we've got about 1,000 kids in care. How much of that 21.6 million does that equate to?
And then, yeah, we're currently, we have to report that tomorrow, the 20th, and all this is pretty much started in April, and so our April numbers will be reported tomorrow. So staff are still, they're frantically trying to capture all that right now because they want all this separate as far as the calculation. So I don't have that currently with me, the exact number. We can send that out. I should have it tomorrow, and I can send that out, and we'll have to clarify. What I mean is, all these things you're looking at, additional children of essential workers, parent share of cost, 25% supplement. We also have one that didn't get on here. We're paying the clothes providers. They're getting a portion of their daily rate. And that's a fourth component that didn't go on. I wrote this, and then that kind of happened after the fact. But so all of that's going to be, when we're talking COVID-19 related payments, it'll be all those we're talking about that are specific to these items. And so we should have those finalized, ready to report tomorrow on the 20th. And then I can summarize all that and we can send it out.
So child care facilities got paid to be closed.
Yes. They got a portion. There's a formula involved. It's Kelly, was it about 9% of their market or something like that?
That's for the closed child care programs have been paid since the day they closed. There is a sustainability grant that is coming available for those who remain closed. That was last week. I don't know if things will change when we have our call today, since the governor has allowed all providers to open back up.
I have a question, Kelly. That money that was granted to the child care centers who were closed, did that go toward anything in particular? Did it go to payment, you know, salaries of staff? Did it go to upkeep of the centers? What did that exactly go to?
Yes, it could have gone to all of those things.
Okay.
It was not, designation.
Okay.
Spend it. It was just to hope that we would have child care programs available when we open the state back up.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Kelly made a good point there. I forgot. So when we started this back in early April sometime, they were getting their normal based on Kelly, we were basing that on what their kids, not kids in care, but their what was the term we were basing that on when this first started? They're enrolled. Well,
the referred children is how
right,
we
right.
Paying the parent share of cost. Yeah.
And so we were doing that at first. And so now, like she said, unless things change, it'll be more based on a grant application that they fill out an application. Then once approved, then they'll start receiving funds for the closed one. So that's all transitioned the last couple of weeks as far as the direction from TWC.
So do they know about this grant operation or this grant application?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Information was sent out by TWC, and we also sent out information through the USPS and through our constant contact. Oh, Laserfish. I think it went out through Laserfish, but yes.
So essentially the child care centers are receiving what I call their primary payments. They get paid every 2 weeks from us. And then on the off weeks, this additional 25% and these the 25% supplements will be paid to them on the off weeks. So they can see that as a separate check and a separate payment. It's not getting lumped in with their traditional biweekly payment. So Like I said, this has been a challenge process wise to get all this when the target's moving so frequently. But staff have done a good job, and so I think everything's rolled along. But like I said, we'll keep you updated, and David, we'll send out. I'll have some numbers summarized tomorrow, and we can send that out to everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Carl. And I'd like to, if I can, I'd like to commend the staff for trying to shoot at a moving target. I know this has not been easy at all, but thank you for all that you're doing and for keeping the childcare industry going, because I've had a real fear with how many have been in business for such a long time and who are actually going under due to COVID. So I appreciate all that y'all have done. Thank you.
Thanks, Elaine. Carlton, you want to continue?
We got one more slide.
I'm sorry.
If we could advance one more right there. Here's another one. I just want to make sure we didn't miss this, because this, again, was the WOA. This is Workforce Investment Opportunities Act. These are our three grants, adult, dislocated, and youth. We get about $12 million a year currently from them, our second largest funding source. We do most all of our training for customers through this. When I say training, colleges, vocational schools, truck driving schools, proprietary schools, that type training. And as you can imagine, to this situation, these expenditures have lagged significantly. Most of the colleges were closed. And so even though we had students enrolled and purchase orders ready and everything approved, the colleges were closed. So, and I know right now they're working a lot more virtual training type capability. So we're hoping to see these start turning some. I fully expect, though, unless things change dramatically, that we're going to have pretty significant funds at the end of the year for carryover to go into 2021. And again, this is just one of those situations very unique to the COVID situation. So that's all I have for right now. I'll happy to entertain any questions.
Yes, I have a question, please.
Okay.
Back to the child care. I have five centers and I am closed, and it has been awesome to get that percentage of my registered kids to help me, because just because I'm closed doesn't mean I still don't have bills to pay.
Exactly.
And it has been amazing. But the way that I understand that, that is ending next week. That money will be done. Now, I did get a letter about the grant, and it doesn't have details. It says that I'll get something else further on June 1st. But there was a question that I had about that. It said that we have to apply for the PPP first. Well, when I contacted my bank regarding the PPP, the PPP is for money for your employees if you're open. I am closed and cannot open because my school is closed.
Kelly, I'll let you address that if you have any further guidance on that.
I don't have any guidance on that, Anna. I will certainly mention that when we're on our call this afternoon.
Okay, thank you. And on, but yes, it is. I really do appreciate getting what I have done, what the monies that you have helped with. It has helped. Yes, ma'am.
You said that, you know, the money will be stopping for y'all.
Yes.
I'm not sure that's the case.
Okay. Well, the correspondence that I got said that those funds were stopping by June 1st and this grant was going to pick up.
That's not what I know as of right now. So.
Okay. Here's what this letter says. Based on the... all active referrals will be suspended on May 31st that are currently in place at closed child care providers, thus ending the payments closed providers were receiving. That came on the May 13th letter.
That is correct if you're still closed.
Okay, so I am closed, so that means that I won't get any more funding from that, right?
Correct. I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question.
So that does go to the grant.
Yeah.
Okay, and we don't have information on the grant yet.
No, we do not.
Okay, so thank you. Thank you for the help that you have given us during this time. It has been very crazy. We are facing another big challenge. Yesterday, when the governor did open us back up, he opened it up with restrictions, and they definitely messed with our ratios. That is going to be a big thing that we're really going to have to look at, because he cut like my after school ratios from 26 to 1 to 10 to 1. That's going to be more expense for me to stay open.
I agree.
So that's going to be our next big hurdle.
So it seems to me, Kelly, if you can get clarification on that and at least maybe let someone in the state know that these are certainly going to be challenges for many of the centers out there, I mean, that would be great. I know for a fact that the lab school at Collin College is not reopening right now, but of course they're subsidized. But they probably would be going under if they weren't subsidized by the college. So, and their ratios are small. So I think clarification on this would be great. I somehow think, I hope I'm wrong, that not everything has been thought out thoroughly in terms of the childcare industry because it's so complex, but it's just my two cents.
Okay, my next question was about that funding for essential workers. And I know we only have 24 hours of that. How do they go about getting that? I'm not clear how they can even sign up for that.
They can go on to our website, and if they'll click on the landing page that says coronavirus update and information.
Yes, ma'am.
Scroll down just a little bit, and the application and the categories that are eligible to apply are right there.
Okay.
And if you have a problem, please let me know. I'll send it out to you.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Is WIOA going to continue? It's just
Yes, it will continue. And there's been rumors actually receiving some more of this funding, it's kind of as a, I won't call it emergency relief, but to help this particular situation we're in. But yeah, these are, to remind you, these are two-year grants. There are three grants we get. I said adult, dislocated, and youth. We get them each July 1. They last 2 years, but we get them each year. So you got overlap on these. So we do have some time. The good news is, even though we're behind expenditures now because of the situation, we do have some time to catch up. It'll just mean we have, if we don't get closer to targets, we'll have substantial carryover going into next year to try to catch up next year. But they are two-year grants. And yes, we do expect these to continue. And, these are huge. This is our second largest of our core funding grants. So we count on these each and every year. They pay a large portion of all the cost of training and operations for our workforce centers. So yes, we do anticipate these to continue.
Thank you.
I have a question about that last slide, if you don't mind going back for just a moment, on our being behind on expenditures.
Okay.
The 740K or so. If you could go back to it.
Three, it was the second to the last slide.
Second to last slide. One.
Yeah, right. Go back one more from the question slide. Just go back one more. That right there. Yeah.
Okay. So all boards are in the same boat. You mentioned that some may be doing better in this metric because of things like virtual training. Is there anything that we can learn? Are there any particular instances or cases out there where we're aware of other boards being able to be more effective in this area that we can, anything actionable from that?
Yeah, so we've actually, and I'll let Dana, are you on here? You address some of this. Dana Buckholder, operations manager. I know we our particular board area, ResCare Workforce Service, our subrecipient has they're planning some virtual online training as well, and they begin the planning for that. And Dana, can you address some of that?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So some of the elements that we're working on or already implemented is we have our Zoom licenses at our contractor level to do virtual case management. We're expanding on that. We're also have working with PPPA. They've issued out a campaign to promote online training through all of our training partners for the WIOA funding that Randy mentioned is for training. So they're able to tap into that. We are expanding our orientations and workshops to be virtual and to be posted onto our website. And we've also reached out to some of the other boards on some of the things that they've been doing to, as you said, Aaron, you know, learn from some that have been utilizing some new technology or new projects or piloting something new, and seeing what they're doing to see how we might be able to replicate it.
This is Debbie, and if I can jump in there, one of the other things that's kind of a really cool deal in my mind is now we have the capability, and we're getting ready to launch, which someone may be mentioning later, virtual job fairs, which will be huge, as you can imagine, with the situation.
I think that's all. That sounds terrific. You sound like you're on top of it. Those are great things. If I don't know if there's going to be an opportunity for some follow up with board members who might be interested to talk to you about some other ideas there. But I think your ideas with virtual training and virtual job fairs, things like that, which I know you we've had success with when you've run those before, are great things. So I appreciate your efforts there. Thank you.
Let me also ask, this is Elaine, have you checked in with any of your partners with any of the community colleges to see what they may have been doing with some of those vocational programs at all, see how they might have been serving students? Classes have still been going on, were still going on this semester, and many of them have those, that lab component or, you know, that work thing.
In general, all the programs that the colleges implement, the ones, for example, that are online, many of those are on our ETPS, training provider system, and they're accessible that way. But we are also looking at possible customized or training programs that may not be on ETPS and how we might be able to reach out and procure for some of those. So that is another option. But typically the college programs, not all of them, but if they're not on there, then and Annabelle may be on the call. She might be able to answer the question about the training providers. We always encourage them to submit their applications if it's on for target occupations.
Thank you. Elaine,
it's Annabelle. Just wanted to make sure that you knew that the colleges had to submit a change of instruction plan to be able to transition from in-person or hybrid into online training program. So we have been processing those changes through the ETP process. And there are several of them, and we have been highlighting those in social media to ensure that those individuals are still interested in those programs, have access to that training online. Additionally, we met with our community colleges as of recent to be able to understand their instruction model outside of ETP, whether it was the non-credit side or the credit side, to be able to understand what was moving online and what was staying in person or as a hybrid. There has, you know, the announcement yesterday may change their plans as of last week, so we may have to do another checkpoint after today. So.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now, I appreciate how proactive you all are.
All right, if there's not any more questions of Randy, then Michael, why don't you give us our performance report?
Okay, good morning, everyone. As you can see, we met or surpassed performance within 14 of our 15 formally contracted measures during the month of February 2020. Therefore, as you can see, we're at a negative performance status with one particular performance measure, and that is the adult credential rate measure, which we'll discuss later in the presentation. Next slide. Okay, so here's our re-measure slide. As you can see, TWC did not present or provide us with re-measure performance data for the month of February, which consists of our 10-week measure and our EWA measure. So there's nothing to discuss with this particular category. On to the next category, Sheree. Okay, this slide is our program participation slide. And as you can see, we met or surpassed performance within both of our program participation measures. Now, starting with our choices performance measure, As you can see, we're hovering right there at that 95% threshold, which is at our meeting performance status. With this particular measure, as you can see, we had a current performance of 47.55%. And also we experienced a slight quarter of a percentage point decrease from the previous month. Now, with this particular measure, the choices measure, we will fall below that 95% threshold for the month of March. But with the current circumstances, we will do everything that we can to increase performance over the course of the remaining months of the year. Now, on to our average children served per day, back one slide, average children served per day combined performance measure. As you can see, we served an average of 7,415 kids per day during the month of February, which is about 97% of target. And also, as you can see, we increased our average number of children served per day by 61 additional children from the previous month. On to our WIOA category, Cherie. And let's skip to the next slide, Cherie. Okay, so the only performance measure that we did not meet for the month of February was, once again, our credential rate measure, which we missed by three participants. Our current performance is about 60% and also about 78% of target. Now, we're projected to miss this performance measure by two individuals at year's end. But once again, we're going to do everything that we can in order to capture these two individuals. Now, some of the things that we're doing to increase performance with this particular performance measure is we're contacting our training providers to gain completion information on our participants. Also, we're continuing to evaluate our participants for patterns of low completion rates. Also, we're continuing to train staff on how to case manage these individuals, and we're continuing to perform denominator reviews with this particular measure. Now, one of the things that we realize with the individuals that's not in the numerator is that when these individuals dropped out of training, we realized that these individuals did not gain their degree of potential as a result of them opting to go into employment. Now, these individuals had wages to appear. Now, this is something that we will continue to experience throughout the year. But once again, we're going to try to gain these two individuals by the end of the year in order to get to that 95% threshold. Last slide. Now, this is our ranking information I usually provide at the end of the presentation. And as you can see, for the month of February, we currently rank 23rd of 28 boards and 4th of 7 large boards with an average rank of 17.40 per formally contracted performance measure. And that concludes my brief presentation, and I will take any questions if you have any.
Hey, Michael, this is Rolanda Masharia. Question, yes. Back on the previous slide of where we missed. What, yes. What is it exactly that we're needing from two individuals in order for us to meet performance? Because it seems like there's a lot of effort that's going to be going into getting the information from these two. And from what I understand, it sounds like you said that they were in class but didn't get completed because, yeah, they took employment?
Yes. After we did the denominator review of individuals who did not appear in our numerator, then we went to search for wages. We realized that those individuals had wages as opposed to remaining in our training program. So basically, after talking with these individuals, the staff realized that these individuals preferred to go back into the labor force as opposed to remaining in training.
Okay. And is that something that we look at, like, if the goal of training is to get them employed,
yes,
and obviously not just employed, but employed with a livable wage or above, and they have, yes, met that goal, then why would there be a negative towards us? Is there not anything in place to take that into account, to say?
The objective of the measure is to receive the credential prior to 1 year after exit. So they went back into the labor force, but they never received the credential.
Okay, so how do we fix that? If you're saying we're going to do everything we can.
One of the things that was highlighted when I talked to the performance analyst over at ResCare was that they're going to continue to work with the staff on how to engage these individuals, how to assess these individuals, and how to proactively case manage these individuals. So that was one of the strategies that that was conveyed to me that they're going to continue to utilize in order to get the successful outcome that they are looking for.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Okay.
Mike. Michael, question on, so these are the reporting for the February timeframe.
Yes.
What are you, do you have any anticipation of what the requirements are going to be? Because most of the negative impacts are going to be in the March and April timeframe. What are you forecasting?
We forecast to the end of the year. And basically, in looking toward the end of the year, the estimated end of year performance, we're going to be missing those individuals. We're going to be missing two individuals. So we're going to focus on getting those two individuals transitioned to the numerator. So we still have time to work on this. And the contractor assured me that this is something that they're going to work on. But based upon forecasted and immature data, we're still going to be meeting by those two individuals. So they're going to place the additional attention on those two individuals to get them to the 95%.
My apologies. I mean, not just in that one category, but performance across the board, all of our performance measures. What, has there been any waiver from the state on performance measures? Is there a need for a waiver? Where are we going to be? What are you forecasting for March and April for all performance measures?
Okay, so I looked at performance for the month of for the month of March. Now, what's going to happen in the month of March? We're still going to be missing two performance measures for the month of March. Right now, that choices performance measure fell below that 95% threshold. We knew that we were going to experience that choices performance measure because it upon unsubsidized work experience, unsubsidized employment with those choices individuals. So we knew that COVID-19 was going to affect that because those individuals wasn't able to get their participation hours. So we knew that that was going to be a problem for us, and we actually did fall below that 95% threshold for the choices population. And once again, with the credential rate measure, we're still not going to meet that credential rate measure for the month of March. TWC once again provides us immature data so we can work forward looking in order to see what we need to do to gain those positive outcomes. So with the information that was provided, we're still going to be missing the adult credential rate measure for the month of March. Now, for any of the other measures, excluding our RAIN measures, we appear to be okay at the end of the year for the month of September. But those are the only two measures that we identified that we're going to have some challenges with. Once again, the choices measure and the adult credential rate measure.
Okay, so help me understand. Like, we're supposed to have the performance measure for 7,000, however many kids in care. How are we going to, what's going to happen? What, we're clearly not, we don't have that many kids in care, or yes. How, so what's the plan to fix that? Or is it matter?
I'm going to defer that question to Kelly.
Okay. Oh, Kelly's off camera. There she is.
Here I am. Well, what we have heard from TWC regarding performance measures for childcare all along the way, they have really pretty much stated, don't worry about performance this year. Our numbers, fortunately, have stayed pretty for the low-income subsidy program, have stayed pretty constant. So we may have a little bit of enrollment to get done, but I don't think it's going to be significant. But, you know, TWC has said, get these essential workers in. And of course, they're not letting us enroll the other population. So I think we'll be okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Michael and Kelly, both.
So David, if I could If I could just ask that same question a different way, because Kelly's answer, I think, helped enlighten why the metric is really measuring enrollment, not a kid being cared for.
Yes.
So if the enrollment doesn't expire, then we'll be okay as far as our numbers are concerned. Is that a good way of looking at that, Kelly?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously, Kenny, the falsehood there is the kid is just enrolled. He's not actually in care.
Right, exactly.
So,
and we're still paying for that, so it's counting for us.
So to the more practical application to me is to the point there is being able to get these people into care so that we can get these children into care so that the parents can go to work so that we can accomplish the economic recovery that we're all trying to accomplish together. So linking all of those together is the most important part there. I think that's where Kenny was going to.
So, I agree.
Getting the facilities open, kind of where Elaine was talking about, as quickly as possible, safely, and reaching out as much as we can to make sure people know that they're there is going to be very beneficial for our overall economy.
Kelly, I have a question for you, please.
Yes.
It's Anna. On the essential worker thing with the CCS, so I don't understand this program very much, and I haven't been open to participate in it because I closed pretty much right away. Mm-hmm. The school, because when the school closed, I closed. So with the essential worker program, what that is people that are essential workers, like healthcare workers or grocery store workers that were not on CCS before, maybe didn't qualify on CCS before, now can qualify for subsidies.
Correct.
And is it at a higher earning rate?
Correct.
Okay. So people that didn't need help with childcare, because I guess I just don't understand why a doctor's kid who didn't need it before needs it now.
Well, and I think some of those reasons are the person who was caring for their child no longer was able to care for them.
Yes.
Questions they have to ask on that, answer on that application. You know, their childcare provider closed down.
Yes.
There's different reasons, but okay. I doubt we have a doctor, but
because it's not based off of financial.
Yes. They have to make they cannot make more than a certain amount of money, which is the income is higher than what our normal low income customers can make.
Okay. Do you know what it is annual?
No, but when we send you the information on those occupations, I'll make sure and include that.
Right. Thank you.
If I may, Anna, just to say something to you in terms of that doctor deal. I happen to have a daughter and son-in-law who are in the medical industry, and he is a surgeon, and they have not had now any income for 2 months. So she's not worked, and he is, as I said, a surgeon. But with COVID, I think we just don't always know, even though they may have a doctor.
Right.
It doesn't mean that they've been working. So,
right.
Very true.
Right. I have staff members that have not been paid for 2 months, and we're all on unemployment, but we can't get staff members paid. That's what I've been using some of my money for.
Yeah, good for you. Just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
Okay. Carlton.
Is there any other, if there's not any other questions for Michael or for Randy, then that concludes our report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Carlton. I appreciate it. Jason, if you would join us for the Workforce Development Committee update. I see you on the call, Jason. Are you available?
Oh, Good morning, everyone. Are you there?
Hey, good morning, Jason.
Good morning. I apologize for that. I unmuted my phone, but I did not unmute it on the computer screen, so I apologize. I'm on the phone this morning. I did not bring my laptop, and I turned in my morning, so I am just watching you guys from my desktop. So I apologize, no camera, but to be honest, that's probably a good thing. So the Workforce Development Committee met on April 29th, and Chip Evans led that meeting on my behalf. Thanks, Chip, for doing that. So this will be a short report. There wasn't many things covered, so we approved the minutes from the February 25th meeting. And of course, we did a COVID update from Mr. Setzer. And then there was a recommendation for board policy on the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, the WIOA, in regards to needs-related payments. And this recommendation was part of the consent items this morning. Dana, do you want to add anything to regarding that recommendation to the board?
No, it was already approved under the consent, so we are good. Thank you.
Okay, great. So that was it for the committee update. Unless there's any other questions?
Do we have any questions for Jason or the Workforce Development Committee? Okay. With that, go ahead.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jason. With that, the next update is the executive committee update. And I do want to point out, obviously, I'm not Roger Harris, but Roger Harris sends his greetings from Connecticut, where he is working on some personal business out there. And I know he has been very actively monitoring the workforce board and the items that have been going on here. And in fact, he led the executive committee meeting on the on March 17th, where the executive committee recommended on the board's behalf that the COG enter into a lease for the Denton Workforce Center with LAD Ventures LLC for the property located at 5800 Interstate 35 in Denton for a period of 10 years, beginning April 1, 2021. So, Randy, did you have anything you wanted to add to that regarding that particular lease? I mean, we had to take action, I think, on it quickly, and that's why it was done at the executive board level.
Right. No, nothing at this time. The lease has been fully executed, and the owners there are starting to get permits and hopefully ready to start getting ready to build here pretty quick, and they are still optimistic we can be ready by April 1st, 2021 to occupy our new facility.
Thank you, Randy. Not specific, but I do want to point out that through the executive committee has met several different times, and this board has been very well represented in some of the other items that have been going on in our communities. Roger Harris participated in the Collin County Economic Recovery Task Force. I know that David Setzer was actively working on the, I believe, Ellis County Economic Recovery Task Force. There's been a lot of activity from various members on this team. And I just, again, want to compliment. There we go. Thank you, David. the Ellis County Economic Recovery Task Force. This board has been very active in many different ways. And those are just the things that I know of that we've been participating in behind the scenes to help our entire region get back on its feet economically. So thank you to all the people that have been participating in that. With that, Mary Ford to present the Management and Operations Workforce System Procurement. This is an action item. Mary, can we?
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me? Good morning. Good morning. Yes, I have two, you should have two recommendations there in your packet this morning for workforce procurements. In the month of February, the North Central Texas Council of Governments released two major workforce procurements. The first one was for our child care program services, the management and operation of those services. And that RFP was released on February the 6th. and it closed on March the 20th. And at that time on March the 20th, we received only one proposal that met the proposal submission deadline, and that was from ResCare Workforce Solutions, Workforce Services, which is our current child care services provider. Therefore, under the direction of Texas Workforce Commission, our evaluation team moved forward with evaluating the one proposal from ResCare. And that proposal evaluation team was comprised of five external evaluators as well as two internal evaluators. And they provided the main feedback on the monitoring and fiscal portions of the proposal from ResCare. And as you can see, and I think it's on the screen, the evaluation criteria that was used for this particular RFP, there were five categories. And as you can see on the handout there, the two middle categories, quality of system design and demonstrated effectiveness, had the most weight because that's what we were looking at the hardest in this RFP. And since ResCare Workforce Solutions is our current child care services provider, the evaluation team recommended that the Workforce Board continue to work with ResCare to improve their performance in the child care services program through the fiscal year, the upcoming fiscal year 21, which is beginning October the 1st through September the 30th of 2021. That was the first RFP. The second RFP was for the management and operation of our workforce center system, which is all of our workforce centers within our 14 county board area. That RFP was released on February the 27th, and it actually closed on March the 30th. And at that time, we did have four proposals that met the submission deadline. And those were submitted by Career Teams, Dynamic Workforce Solutions, ResCare, and Serico of Texas. And with those four proposals, the proposal evaluation team went forward and with the scoring and evaluation of those four proposals. Again, we had five external evaluators and two internal evaluators, and the internal again focused on the fiscal and the monitoring pieces of the RFP. The criteria, you can see it laid out there. I won't go over all of it, but again, the most heavily weighted is the quality of system design and the demonstrated effectiveness. And as a result of the evaluation and scoring of those four proposals, the evaluation team recommend the selection of ResCare Workforce Services as the Workforce Center Services subrecipient or provider for contract year, fiscal year 21, beginning October the 1st through September the 30th. And with both the child care and with the workforce system RFPs, since ResCare Workforce is our current provider, there will be no transition period, and we will continue to work with them and move into the next contracts period. And if there are any questions you have, I'll try to address those, as well as David and Dana will be available to chime in as needed.
Yeah, Mary, this is Elaine. I do have a question. Since ResCare was the only application, I guess, that you received for the child care services procurement, was there any talk about what if you all had decided not to go with them? What would have taken place since you only had one proposal?
Well, and I'll let David and Dana address that, but you can always have the option to go out again. But David, Dana, which do you want to go ahead and sure. address our thoughts on that?
Sure. I'm glad it didn't happen, number one, but we were prepared if that did happen. TWC requires us to have kind of a plan B for something like this at all times. You know, we have in the past let a contractor go in the middle of their term. And so we, part of that is to be prepared for that, that eventuality. So I'm disappointed that we didn't get more submissions, but looking at the time frame of when this was happening, I understand why some entities that perhaps had expressed interest in our business, but they just have too much on their hands with all the COVID stuff going on and taking care of their existing customers. So we engaged TWC's procurement staff and their childcare staff and walked this process completely through them. They were engaged all along, giving us the guidance that we needed, because basically what it ends up being is what's called a sole source procurement. You only have one provider that can provide it. In this case, it's not that there's only one that can provide it, it's there's only one that wants to provide it. Mm-hmm. So we proceeded along that route. We had, like I said, we had TWC staff in there doing it the way they wanted it done, because that's what will happen when the monitors come in. They'll look at our how our process was. So, and actually, as you, excuse me, as you know from Michael's presentation, ResCare was meeting performance
right.
in February. They began to turn things around. Also, we were under a technical assistance plan from the state, and that has also been suspended. So I think I'm generally encouraged with the progress ResCare is making. We've done well on getting essential worker kids enrolled and maintaining our kids that are in care as those redeterminations have come up. They've been working on those, and we've had a high percentage of them stay in care. So we always have to be prepared for the likelihood of having to find someone to do work for us. And just to go a little bit further on that, so in our discussions with the state on that, what they would allow us to do is for the board staff to step in and act as the contractor. But if we do that, then we have to hire external people to monitor us. Mm-hmm. So it's not a position you want to be in, but there are procedures in place to make it work if it does happen.
Yeah, well, you know, my thought process was I too am encouraged by the fact that ResCare has kind of moved things around a bit, but I just wanted to make sure that you all on staff were encouraged enough by their performance that this was the correct, that ResCare was the correct way to go.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, they're getting more encouragement than they want.
Well, good. I would hope so. Okay. Thank you, David.
This is Roz, and I don't know if I missed it or not, but what is their term as far as their contract will go? I heard
it's a 1 year contract with four possible renewals.
Okay. So that's
if they
good.
Do not perform,
yeah,
at the end of a year, we have a whole list of options that at our disposal.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
Hi, this is Dana. Mary did read both of the recommendations kind of together. They are two separate action items in the agenda. So, David, we would need to do a recommendation individually for each of those items.
I see that. I just want to make sure we get all of the questions covered. And in fact, I'll throw one back on the term. Are those 1 year terms at the contractor's option, or are they our option?
They're our option.
And how far in advance are they required to notify us if they choose to not pursue that?
I think it is.
Isn't it a 6 month thing?
Dana, do you remember what's in there?
I can go in and pull. Mary, if you can go in and pull as well. I have to pull our actual contract. I don't have that off the top of my head.
I think it is 180 days, 6 months, but we'll see what it exactly it is. Let them find it.
Yeah, so going to kind of Roz and Elaine's commentary is you might have a contractor for 6 months. So, I mean, they could choose to, for the child care services, there's a whole lot of risk in there. So the board would need to be prepared for that backup option 6 months from now. Or 6 months from whenever the October 1st. So, are there any other while we're looking just for that? If that's a 6 month opt out, are there any other questions on the two proposals? One for the workforce services and or the child care services.
Yeah, David, I had one comment. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's Kenny Weldon. Since Mary, you said there was not a transition period. That's obviously because it's the same contractor. But I would hate, and this is just an idea. It's out there, so everybody may say not a good idea. If it were a new contractor, there would be startup costs and there would be a transition period with a focus on what are we going to do together? And I think that's an opportunity lost if we just assume, well, this is the same old contractor. We're going to keep on doing what we've been doing. I would encourage us to come up with a transition period and put money against it to ensure there is a renewal of the partnership and maybe even some looks at program management or business processes that need to be enhanced going into this at the beginning and do it with a sense of renewal and freshness with it. And, you know, maybe some of this money that we've got as carryover could be money that we could bring to the table along with ResCare, bringing in some money to do something tied to that, you know, the spirit of a transition period. Just interested in your comments or thoughts on that.
We are doing that. We refer to it as a transition period because if you exactly as you spoke to it, you have a new contractor coming in and an old contractor that's winding down. So primarily what's going on there is the resourcing of the staff. You know, usually a new contractor will come in and interview staff and make decisions and get their management team on board. So we have not backed off one bit on ResCare in their performance and meeting our expectations. The only thing, the TAP just means we are not reporting to the state. That doesn't mean we're not continuing to work with ResCare on processes. We have a major rewrite of the Laserfish software that transitions to more of a call center operation, but it was originally supposed to go out in this month, has been delayed because of the COVID. We need staff. ResCare prefers for staff to be in the office to be trained on the new system. So we have respected that request. And right now we are looking at July to roll that new system out. But that's part of increasing the expectations and looking for better performance improvement on the whole process. So your point is well taken, Kenny, and we are doing that.
Okay, this great. Is Debbie. This Thank is you. Debbie. Let me jump in here too. And just because things have been very fluid with COVID doesn't mean we've stopped with monitoring. We've not stopped any of our ongoing things that we do to ensure they're not only compliant, but they're looking at improvement. And so we haven't backed off of that one bit, and we won't. We just don't have another contractor we're introducing to the party at this point.
David?
Yes.
Underneath our current contract terms that on the subrecipient side, on ResCare side, it is 180 days minimum notice for the contractor side.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions regarding the two recommendations? We'll start with the first, is there a motion to recommend the selection of ResCare Workforce Services by the North Central Texas Council of Governments as the workforce system subrecipient for the initial contract year beginning October 1st, 2020 through September 30th, 2021, with the option to renew for up to 4 additional 1-year terms. Do I have that motion?
So, David, this is Mickey Hillock. I make that motion.
Thank you. May I get a second?
Roz Lane, second.
Thank you, Roz. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Anyone in opposition? Is that in opposition? Did I catch one? All right, then that motion passes unanimously. The second item for action is I need to get a motion to recommend the selection of ResCare Workforce Services by the North Central Texas Council of Governments as a child care provider subrecipient, for the initial contract year beginning October 1, 2020 through September 30, 2021. With the option to renew for up to 4 additional 1-year terms. Do I have anyone that would make that motion?
I'll make that motion.
Is that Elaine?
No, it's Anna, but Anna. Elaine will second.
Okay, we have a motion from Anna and a second from Elaine. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes. Thank you all for that. Thank you, Mary and Dana for checking that out. We're going to switch now to Mr. Setzer for the executive director's report.
All righty. Thank you. Thank you, David, Mr. Bristol. So what I did with the committees and with the executive board for the COVID updates, I hope y'all have been following our process, our progress as we have been sending those updates out twice a week, most recently. And it's kind of interesting if you go back and you look at the information that we're reporting, you'll see things, they show up as a concept from a meeting with TWC. And then a little further along, we get some guidance on it. And then there's the implementation and then there's results. And of course, essential childcare is a great example of that. And so I will be bringing you up to date on several of the most recent things. And as a matter of fact, we had something come up Friday that I want to brief you on. So there's been a tremendous amount of interest in UI data since we have been in this situation that we've been in. And we've been working on a specific dashboard for us locally. I do provide a link in there if you want to go look at data. And there's county data on the state's system. But we've been working on a little bit more of a local dashboard. So I'm going to turn this over to Daniela Ramirez, and she's going to share what she's been working on with you. And then once she's run through that and gotten some feedback from you, I'll go through the rest of the COVID update.
Danielle, are you with us?
Sar.
Yeah, I see her on the screen. It shows her to be unmuted, but... There she is, connecting to audio. Hang on. All right, Danielle, it looks like you need to unmute now.
Hello, can you hear me?
There we go. Thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
We can now, yes.
Hello?
We can hear you now. Yeah.
Sorry, let me try one more. Okay. Think I'm good now? Can somebody confirm?
We can hear you, Danielle. Yes.
Sorry about that. I had connected through my iPhone, but I don't think you could hear me. So I'm connected through audio via my computer. I was saying that, as David was saying, we have a conversation we can focus on to further assess the economic impact of the pandemic. I want to get started with the dashboard that the Texas Workforce Commission is making available on their website. So if you start on their homepage under Spotlight and go to read more about UI claims, you can see the map or dashboard that I'm talking about. So this dashboard provides unemployment insurance claimant data for different geographies. The map is interactive. You can zoom in and zoom out. And in other words, it offers it captures the people who have filed for unemployment insurance benefits. The first tab, you can see the information for by workforce development area. And if you click on our board, you can pull up information. For example, the population, the overall population is next to the UI claimant count for a world perspective. And then we can also see the detailed industries from which, from where claims originate. Here, you have the top five. And then if we scroll down, you can also see the gender distribution. And further down, you can see the month-to-month comparisons and how those counts compare. I wanted to note that this information is being made available on a month, 1 month period, and it's being updated weekly. So every time it's updated, you will see it. It'll only cover 1 month. Right. You can also further navigate this by clicking on the legend, and it'll pull up the same information we just saw. And then we also have a comparison on the right-hand side over here and how we measure against other boards. We also have this information at different geographic levels. Here we can see it by county. And again, it's the same setup. You click on the map and you find the information that we just saw, but for workforce development area. And at a more granular level, we can see it by zip code. The darker orange shades indicate a higher number. I'm zooming in into our area so we can kind of see, so we can get an idea of where those higher numbers are located. All right, and we can also see this information by different district boundaries and as well as statewide counts. Here we have a further breakout of where the claims come from in terms of industry as well as accounts for the state. This data is available for download. Here you can see that. And that's it for this. Now I'm going to switch over to some information that we have been working on internally that focuses on job posting information. Here, through the data that the Texas Workforce Commission is offering us, we're getting an idea of the number of people who are on the search for jobs. And by switching over to job postings, we wanted to provide further understand what our labor market is looking like recently. Before I get started on those job posting breakouts, I also wanted to cover very briefly, the unemployment rate for the counties that make up our service area. Here you have those counties listed, as well as the rate for our region combined. Here we have a 6-month comparison and how the rate has changed over time, as well as a comparison from the last 3 years based on the month of March. As you see, the rate was decreasing 2018 to 2019 from year to year, but then all the counties and our overall area have seen an increase. And I also wanted to make a distinction between unemployment rate and claimant information. The unemployment rate comes from a survey administered by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and this does not pull from claimant information. I just wanted to make that distinction. There's a little bit more that comes with claimant data. For example, a big one is that people may still be unemployed even after their benefits expire. So it's not a straightforward reflection of how many people don't have jobs. Okay, now switching over to the job postings. Here we have them broken out by industry. What you saw on the Texas Workforce Commission dashboard was a detailed view of the industry when I clicked on the board areas, for example, but here we have a high-level view. Here we have them all listed, everything that makes up our economy, and I have a couple unselected, and that's mostly for, so you can see this more clearly and less cluttered, but also the ones that I have unselected make up less than 1% of the total job postings within this time frame, starting with February, going to mid-May. As you can see, we have a month-to-month comparison that you can see by the color codes here. And I wanted to point out that all industries have seen dips since we started tracking this, with the exception of manufacturing and transportation, which actually, where there were more job postings from February to March, but then also saw a dip starting from the switch that took place between March and April. And then I also wanted to note that there's a big dip between April and May, but we're only tracking half the data for May, so it's not a complete view. We also wanted to provide a view of even a more recent snapshot of what the industry demand is looking like. Here we switch over to April and May, and I don't think there are any surprises here. Healthcare and social assistance is the biggest industry hiring right now, followed by finance and insurance, professional services, and other industries like manufacturing, retail trade, et cetera. So through the job posting analytic tool that we have access to, we can also pull the skills that are connected to the job posting. Here we have everything that come with the job postings that were up from March to mid-May. The bigger bubbles reflect a bigger number of the more times these skills were mentioned. And here I singled out the top 10 skills in demand. Something that stuck out to me was that employers are mentioning some skills that are very much tied to the pandemic, so, such as cleaning and customer contact. and some others that I also think are in tune with what we hear in the news, such as IT and customer service. And lastly, we also wanted to provide skills that are broken out by top industry. Here we focus on finance, healthcare, professional services, and retail trade. And we can see them individually and how those measure against each other. We're hoping this provides a further guidance as we compose our assistance to people who are looking for training and other services. So that's all I have. Does anybody have any questions?
So a question for you is, how much of this data prior to the COVID crisis was available to us?
So we can actually go back, extend our time frame from which we pull this information and do more extensive comparisons for the next years.
I'm sorry, I think, let me rephrase my question a little bit more. I think this crisis has driven the request for this information a lot more, because I know in talking with David and Roger and that some of this information, kind of, you guys have been working on developing this to put it into form, especially the UI claimant by zip code. Is that right? Or was that already available to us in that current format?
So that is something that I'm not too sure of. I know that I would have to check on that. I know that it was available by county, but I don't know if it went down to zip code.
So, David, let me jump in here and just say that the first document that Daniela was presenting was images that was being developed by the Texas Workforce Commission. So this is not something we have developed, but rather that the commission has developed. In this format has not been, this was a new format that was given to us about 2-3 weeks ago. And they were only measuring it by county up until that time on a simple chart that was being posted on the website itself. So this is not data that we're necessarily manipulating, but rather we're utilizing that is coming from the Texas Workforce Commission. Is that your question?
It is. Actually, that's what I was trying to point out is, this data in this format was not readily available to us prior to this. And the needs of the county task forces and the governor's task forces are what drove TWC to go to dig down and be able to produce this. That's my understanding. So this is a very, very recent development to be able to do it like this.
Yes. And whether the data was available to them and we could do other stuff that I'm not sure if that was, but this format, whether or not it was publicly available, it's new, that's for sure. Okay. Now on the demand side, we have always had access to some of that information because we have those tools. But the state of Texas recently provided us with an additional tool that allows us to do a deeper dive into postings. So this is not something that we have always had access to, but rather is a combination of tools that we have either purchased or the state has provided to us. So that is also something that is of recent. Daniela, I think that you received the license for the job posting analytics about 2 months ago, 3 months ago?
About, yeah.
So David, part of this story is that TWC has never opened, they've never pulled back the curtain this far on the granularity of the UI data that we are now receiving. I mean, it's a huge database. It's participant specific. There's PII in there. So we have to be very careful with these data sets. And you're right. They spun some things up very quickly at the request of people all over the state. And we just wanted to take that a little bit further in our board area. And what we can do is if any of you have a specific interest in seeing this, we can do a much deeper dive with you on another Zoom call. For those that are interested, we can set that up. and take it into the data, because there are many ways to slice and dice this, and many of the boards wanted this data because it's going to help us analyze what we need to be doing as we start to recover and start to be putting these people back to work, both on their side, on the career seeker side, and on the employer side. What are the employers posting? And, you know, we did a survey out to our businesses about, okay, as you start to think about coming back, what do you need? What skill sets do you need? What job titles are you going to be hiring? So we have a very robust tool to work with now that we didn't have COVID prior to COVID. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. This is what this new, out of every crisis, there's innovation.
Yes.
And this, this is, I think, will be a long-term tool that we will now use in, across every industry for developing what's actually needed out there. So I think this is a very well done by TWC and the board staff. So thank you. Thank you for all that.
Thank you, Daniela. And I'll go back to my report, and I'm going to share my screen now.
So can I interrupt and just ask one quick question, David?
Sure.
And I think it's a fantastic effort, and the innovation is tremendous. As I was looking at the list, though, and Mickey, you might be able to speak to this specifically, I don't see trucking. I don't see, you know, all of the delivery needs that exist now. Those that wasn't listed on there. Now, maybe I wasn't. I mean, I was looking at it very quickly, but you know, I learned a long time ago, you get something like this, you step back and look at it and say, does it make sense? That jumped out at me. And I know a lot of this is reliant upon data that's reported in the industries that are willing to or are able to report. You know, a lot of the trucking industry is independently owned, or, you know, so did I just miss it, or is it in there somewhere? Because if it is, that's great. And I know we've had this discussion before, so maybe it's why we're sensitive to it. The need for transportation. So let me just stop there, and looks like you're ready to answer the question. So thank you.
This is Mickey. What we were looking at, as I see it on that, that was finance and insurance with everything within that, what they were needing in finance and insurance. Is that correct, David? Stature? Can you put that the previous screen back up?
Which one did you want to see this?
The one that had the graft. Not that one, the one previous to that. No. It's not that one. But Kenny, I agree with you, but that's, as I saw that, because as I was looking through those, because I was looking at the top 10, and I looked at number 9 being scheduling, and then I caught it up on the left corner, that was finance and insurance. That's what all they were needing, all that total breakdown in finance and insurance, which is, you know, that's really digging deep. Is that correct, Danielle?
So one way that one possible reason why you're not seeing trucking, it could be measured in different ways as a skill and occupation in an industry. Here we have the highest level view of industries. One of the places where it could be covered is transportation and warehousing, and it could also be somewhere in all the skills that came up with job postings.
So just looking at that chart that she's got up right now, so some of the things that you can do, these are option boxes down the right side of that, and you can broaden it, you can narrow it, there's a select all at the top, but then you can go to a specific industry as you want to. So I think that's why I'm saying this tool is very robust. And so maybe if there's interest in the board, we can, do a webinar to walk through it and demonstrate some of the features that it has. But I would be very surprised if trucking is not in there somewhere under transportation or whatever. But come to, you know, I don't think trucking has been hit quite as hard as some of the others, because, you know, we've continued to need the supply chain, and those people have continued to work. So we'll certainly peel that onion a little bit, and we'll canvass the board to see if there is interest in us doing a separate webinar on just this tool for you.
Okay. I kind of like to take it just a little bit further, because as I was starting to look at the top jobs that we were looking at, I was a little concerned, because we were looking at what people were needing the most of, and they were, I don't remember how it was worded. But then the further I read, because I was concerned, you know, it's not, they were looking at turnover. It wasn't the number of turnover, but it was the number of needs, the way that we were listing it. But as I read further down, because my concerns are, just like we talked about, was trucking might be one, the airline industry, you know, they're going to be looking down the road of a lot of airline pilots retiring. And then, so that's really not turnover, but we're looking at categories that are losing people. And that's what happened in the trucking industry, is people got out of it. The trucking, the biggest reason the truck drivers started going down is when they started putting GPS on them, and you had then you had to be accountable for your miles, where they could run different books before. That took that away. Well, so that's where they started losing so many drivers. But we got so many industries and skills, with plumbing, electrical, that people are not going into those trades. So you're really not having turnover. You're just having that industry, the jobs going away. And I don't know what we do to make sure we stay on top of that and try to bring people, when we start looking for certificates and classification or certifications, that we try to move these other kids into these avenues that are going to be needing in plumbing, electrical, trucking, airline, things of those nature.
But this definitely has a correlation to our targeted occupations list, which y'all, you know, approved for us. And, you know, remember, a lot of the data that we look at is very high level. And then we rely on you, our board members, and others in our board area to provide us with what we call, remember, local wisdom about specific things that the data may not show that we really need to focus on. We've put certain occupations on the target occupations list just based upon that in the past, and we'll continue to listen to our constituents, our stakeholders, about those types of situations. All right. And I'm going to move back to the share my screen now. Let's see here. All right. Can everybody see my COVID update? So this is the COVID update that went out Thursday. And I just kind of want to walk y'all through it. The third bullet is funding has been provided by TWC for temporary staffing to work with the job seekers that we know are coming and are going to be coming in droves. And so TWC has given us, they've allowed us to use some traditional funding in a little different way. And we're going to be able to hire an additional 14 positions. That's at ResCares level, and they're actively recruiting for those positions right now. Adobe Sign is a feature that we talking about virtual career case management services. That allows us now to capture signatures on documents that we previously had to have people come in and sign. And so that's enabling us to be more virtual in our service delivery. And we've been, we're really being challenged by TWC, like as David was referring to earlier, don't waste a good crisis, learn from it. And so TWC is learning from it along with us. And so we are going to continue to deliver these services virtually as much as possible. And I'll talk about that a little bit more when we get a little further down here. And there's beginning to be some talk, or there has been. Anna was one of the first people that brought this up to me a while back. And that is that there's a large number of people that are making more on UI now, especially with the COVID money that comes into that, than they were making working. And so the issue has arisen about if their previous job is offered to them and they refuse it, can they continue to draw unemployment? I'm not going to go into all of the operations, but there's a link there that talks about this topic, and we can talk to you if you have more questions. I talked about our survey that came out of Christina's group, that employee needs assessment, and we continue to leave it open. We've gotten 175 responses so far. This is as of last week. It's probably gone up a little bit. And so we are using that data to help us formulate a COVID-related skills grant that we'll be submitting to the state. As some of these critical job skills start emerging from this, we'll make those part of our skills grant. We've started outreaching our UI claimants. We sent an outreach piece through Constant Contact to 53,000 of them last week. And we are preparing a second outreach, but it's not quite fully baked yet. And that is to make these UI claimants aware of things that are coming their way. Probably in June, you're going to see a work search return as a requirement to continue receiving UI benefits. So we want to start working with these people and try and get them back to work as soon as we can. And our social media campaign on responses for workforce training, we're getting some response to that. Our virtual career fair tools, we procured there's one in WIT, but we also procured another outside firm, and we now have a career fair scheduled for May the 28th, and these numbers have probably gone up also from last week, 425 career seekers and 13 employers registered for that event, and TWC is helping us promote that through some of their press opportunities. You heard a lot about child care. We are still asking our providers to provide that frontline child care data so we can see. But as the essential worker stuff starts winding down, we'll be talking about it less and less. We have received 1,712 applications. We've placed 1,125 children in care. And then we have some that are pending provider selection, and some are pending responses for the participants. So that number is going to go up. And last Thursday, we sent out communication to our provider network about this upcoming stabilization grant. You heard Anna and Kelly talking about that a little earlier. So we'll continue to roll information out to our providers. And something else we've been talking about, and this is one of those that you can see move from concept to guidance to implementation on, and it changed, it morphed tremendously from the concept stage. And what ended up was a provider of these supplies went online and had a special port for child care providers to go in, order the supplies they were having difficulty getting, pay for them online, and then they were shipped. They were going to be shipped to us at the Council of Governments, and we were going to set up a drive-through distribution operation for them to come in. So The way this one morphed was when the providers went online and ordered it, they had an option to select where they wanted to pick their stuff up. And we had 20-something providers that took advantage of the process, and all but four chose to have their stuff shipped to a location in Dallas, which we have no problem with. But remember, we'd been talking about gearing up and volunteers coming in, and we were going to have all these people lined up. Well, it ended up a Shakespearean play, much ado about nothing. It really isn't about nothing, but we got all wound up about planning for it, and then it was kind of a fizzle there at the end. So we've actually gotten all of that. There may be maybe one provider that hasn't received theirs, but we're continuing to roll that out. So the last thing I want to touch on is some information that TWC rolled out on Friday and on their call, and this will continue to evolve. We'll be doing an update of this tonight, so we'll be updating all this information on this update tonight. But what we heard Friday is, all right, TWC is pushing us to start considering how we are going to provide for in-person customer appointments going forward. Many of these UI recipients, as they come back and they want to get back to the workforce, they're going to need one-on-one help from our case managers in the centers. And so TWC is asking us to have a plan to them by June the 1st for a possible 615 implementation. So we're working with ResCare right now, going through all the protocols, the things we will have to do. We won't be bringing everybody back. We're going to bring back some subset of ResCare staff. It's probably going to be well below half of their staff. We may be staggering when staff are in the centers. TWC is trying to procure a online tool for scheduling that they're going to make available to us to use for this purpose. So there's a lot to evolve on this. But we wanted you to know that we're beginning to talk about a model to provide for in-person customer appointments. All the social distancing, all the protocols will be there. We can't test them when they come in. We will not be scanning their temperature and that kind of stuff. But we will probably have an attestation form for them to sign saying they haven't been exposed. You know, all that. Many of you have seen some of that as you've probably gone to the doctor's office or whatever. So there's a whole lot of this that's going to need to be rolled out. And so we are working very rapidly on this plan with ResCare. And you'll be hearing much more about it in the future. That's going to end my COVID update. I'll be glad to take a question. Before I take any questions, the last thing is to introduce the new staff. So we have continued to fill our positions. As you saw in Randy's report, we had some positions open. He alluded to it. So in early April, we added two new senior child care specialists to Kelly's group, and that's Ada Gonzalez and Kimberly Vaughn. So they joined us in April, and they've been getting up to speed remotely. And we have another staff member that will be joining us on June the 1st. We're not ready to announce who that is, but it's filling a vacancy in Debbie's shop. So we have continued to make sure we've got the staff that we need. We still are attracting very, very high quality candidates for all our positions. So let me pause there and see if there's any questions on the COVID update or anything I covered.
Hey, David, it's Rolanda. I do have a few questions, and some you did cover and some I'm not sure where to direct those to. But you mentioned the social media campaign for responses to virtual training, and it kind of ties into one of my questions. For WIOA participation right now due to COVID, have we seen a cease in that participation, or is everything gone virtual? I want to promote WIOA, but at this point, I'm not sure how those training classes are being handled, whether we are training right now or whether it's going to go virtual or if people can even apply. How do they get the orientations and things of that nature? So that's the first question. The second, yes.
I'll tackle that first one real quick. Awesome. Continue to refer the customers to Workforce. We are open for business in the sense it is virtual at this point. The contractors are receiving requests for training from customers. Many of them are, as we said earlier, virtual. But yes, we are continuing to service the customers. So please keep the information flowing because they are there and we are offering ITAs, individual training accounts, to the customers.
Fantastic. I know before they had to come in and do the WIOA orientation. So now if they just contact the workforce boards, are they doing orientation over the phone with them to explain how that works?
They're looking at right now, we're doing one-on-ones. We're working on some additional video and workshops for on our website. But at this point, they're able to go in and do one-on-ones with the customers.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you so much for that one. This other question, I'm not sure, David, if you or anybody, but I watched one of the updates from TWC the other day, and they said that there were these thousands, 4,000 to 5,000 jobs available for contact tracers and investigators, and said to contact your local workforce board. But when I went to WIT, I really didn't see any in our region. I saw a lot that said like Houston and other areas. Is this something, contact tracers and investigators, something that we're doing or we're having available within our region?
So this is another of the evolving initiatives. We were actually kind of directed by TWC not to go off and spend a bunch of our COVID-related training money because they want some of it in the bank for the anticipated demand for contact tracers. We do not know at this point what type of training that consists of, how many are going to be required. We have been outreaching our health departments in our various counties to start trying to determine some of this, but it is, we're right in the very front end of this. It's emerging almost daily. So we're ready to do whatever it is the state needs us to do, work with whoever we need to work with. But at this point, we don't even know what training is going to be required. So that one, I'm going to ask you to stand by on that one because it's going to be evolving probably pretty rapidly. And a lot of that, you know, there's all kinds of speculation out there about, you know, us opening up and a resurgence and all that. So it's a little bit of a hazy cloud right now. And as it starts to clear up and we learn more about it, it will certainly be reported on in this update.
Awesome. Thanks so much, David. And then the last question. I know in Workforce, we had a program that helps the elderly. I believe you had to be like over 60 or something like that. And what they would do was that we would pay for them to work with volunteer nonprofit organizations. With everything going on right now, is that still something that we offer so I can continue to promote that? And then in with that question is something that I'm seeing with the trend. As a lot of these people have gotten laid off, some of them have been at their jobs for a long time, they're elderly, they're up in age, and maybe the work that they did with the current job, they may not be brought back on. So is there anything we're looking at for retraining people at that elderly age for a whole different line of business that they could do, maybe different from what they did before? As we are seeing, I am hearing that out in the field that, like, for example, there was a older gentleman who had worked at a dentist thing doing 3D, doing the 3D models for the teeth, and they had did that for a long time. Well, that business is not reopening, and now their concern is, you know, is somebody going to hire me now at 60 years old? There seems to be a challenge of older people being concerned about coming back into the workforce after this is over.
So, Rolanda, this is Dana. In regards to the specific program you're referring to, that's the CSEPT program. And we are a required partner with that program. It's not actually administered by the board or our workforce centers, but we are a required partner. And in that sense, we actually assist that program with locations in our workforce centers that their staff, and we actually host some of their participants to do work experience in our centers. We have heard from them that, you know, they are right now are kind of doing remote and kind of holding off on doing a lot of work experience because that is a high-risk population that they're dealing with. And so they, the information that we were given through ResCare, because they had actually reached out to ResCare, was that they are in no rush and hurry to get back into our workforce centers, i.e. our workforce centers are not open physically. And they're still evaluating how they're going to be implementing some of those services. As far as just in general population, if someone is in a, you know, senior citizen or and is just wanting to get back into the world of work, whether that's a job that they've lost or maybe they were in a work experience opportunity and they can't participate in that, definitely we want to continue to connect them with our workforce center. You know, the workforce center, and when they're working with the customers, they're working with all types of barriers. One of it, i.e. would be their age, but definitely we want to continue to connect them to the workforce center.
Fantastic. Thank you guys for answering. That's all I have.
Okay, if there's no more questions, Mr. Bristol, I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, I think Anna has a question.
Okay. Not want to unmute.
Am I unmuted now?
There you go.
You are.
On the supplies that go to centers, I wanted to know more about that specifically. Is it like sanitation stuff, you know, wipes and disinfectant stuff? Is that part of it? And is that going to continue even, like, how long is that going to continue? Because I think it looks like we're going to be doing that type of stuff for a long time.
I'll let Kelly weigh in on that.
Anna, I think the plan is for it to continue. I think it'll depend on the response that TWC got from that. This went out to every child care facility within our region, and yes, we had 21 that actually purchased.
Like, what type of things did they request?
It was bleach and hand sanitizer, gloves, paper products, anything that you would need to sanitize.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Some of those were difficult to find even toward the end of when I was open. Okay. David, thank you for putting that link up about and making that reference about the bonus of unemployment. Because, yes, my staff is currently the ones that are getting paid are making more than they've ever made. And I understand that if they refuse to come to work, I can end their benefits. I also understand if I bring them back to a $10 an hour job when they're making their unemployment plus $600, they're not going to be very excited about coming back to work for me.
Yeah, that's definitely an unintended consequence, but it is a reality.
That's not a very big team building opportunity for me. So I'm hoping that we come back after that ends, but I'll come back whenever the school opens back up. Okay. That'll end in July, and I kind of hope they don't keep it going.
All right.
Thank you, though.
Any other questions? Mr. Bristol, back to you.
Thank you, David. Thank you, everybody, for all of that. At this time, then, I don't see any action for the executive session. I'll just make a comment at this point here that our attorney Carvin, this may be the very first meeting that he's ever attended that I don't think he's had anything to had to speak on. So, McCarvin, thank you for being here. So there'll be no action. Item 8 will be other business. So what I'd like to throw out here, I will ask for other business if anybody has it, but a simple comment for the group, for the staff, for the board, for all the contractor personnel on here are my own personal opinion at this point here in time is that we've done a good job as a board, as a region in managing this particular crisis, which is the largest crisis of most of our lifetimes. I just want to caution everybody, this is not even close to being over yet. And the flexibility that this board and the staff and the contractors have displayed so far, I think will get challenged even more in the future And this will be a much longer play than the shutdown orders or safer at home orders. And the impact are going to be out there for people, families, and businesses for a long period of time. Maybe more than 6 months, it'll last for many business cycles for a while. So I just want to thank everyone individually for supporting the board and what you're supporting in your communities to help facilitate a safe, healthy economic recovery for our entire region. There's been a lot of controversy about opening safely, not opening safely. It's a matter of eventually we will get back to a normalcy, but it'll be a new kind of normalcy. So that's my 2 cents worth. I'll open it for any other board member that may want to weigh in on something like that.
David, this is Mickey. You made mention earlier about thanking the staff of everything they'd done, and David, what he has done, Stetzer. I would like to thank him also. One of the things he's done just recently is came in on a Zoom meeting with the economic development for Corsicana and made a presentation on North Central Texas workforce. And thank you, David, for doing that. Really appreciate that good information. And thank you for the kind words that you gave towards me. So thank you.
Nice. Anyone else?
We've had a few of those opportunities. I actually have one tomorrow. I'm going to be doing an interview with CBS 11, I believe it is. It's not going to be a live interview, but it's going to be a Zoom, and we have provided them with some of our outreach materials and some of the things that we're doing. It's primarily employer-focused on rolling out of this. And I agree with David. I don't think we're not even halfway through the woods. So, we've had some opportunities to do those and help, we held a forum for Commissioner Dimmerson. So, and I have to tell you, I just try to keep staff out of the ditches. They're doing all the work. They're really getting this done. And, I always consider myself the fluff. So, our response, contractors' response, that's all the good people we have out there working for us. So,
hello, this is Mira, and I'm in. So it's been a really interesting journey, like always. It always is. But I have to thank David and your staff. You guys have done such an amazing job. I get immersed in healthcare and our issues of trying to train people and trying to figure out, you know, who do we phase in right now for the non-essential people? So and reports that I've received from you, David, has helped us. I share that information with everybody within THRU, and it helps us, as one data source to move forward in what kind of classes and training we're going to offer. Are we going to link up with colleges and universities? And when do we have these nursing students or pharmacy students back in our entity? So I do my work, but the partnership that I have with the board members helps provide me with another glimpse of the community, and it helps me do my job and be a little bit more effective in what I do. So thank you.
Thank you, Mira.
David, this is Roz Lane. And I just want to say that the board members also have been active and not taking any thunder from staff. But during this crisis, we now have Dr. Gay Goodwin.
Ah, congratulations. Yeah.
Very good.
Way to go.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Roz.
Congratulations.
Thank you for pointing that out. Congratulations, Gay. Any other items under other business for the board? Okay. Well, in that case, then thank you everyone for participating. Thank you for your involvement. Thank you for all you're doing across the community. And I will adjourn the meeting now at 11:44. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, also.
Thank y'all.